are listening to the Eurofolk Radio Network at eurofolkradio.com. And now, it's the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show with your host, Andrew Carrington Hitchcock.
Hello, everybody, and that voice you just heard is the voice who's joining me today for his new show, Fetch on Friday. So I'm going to bring him up right now. Dennis Fetcho. Dennis, are you with me?
I am, indeed. Thank you. Hi, how are you? How's everybody?
Yeah, good. I mean, I've been following Inside the Eye Live, as I always do, and Inside the Eye Live Primetime. And also, I heard the fantastic show that you did alongside Frederick Tobin with Breiser and Graham Hart that went out on Monday. I always pick these shows up on the download, as you know. I listened to it yesterday. Folks, if you go to grism.blogspot.com, you should be well familiar with that site now, and you will find that show, and it's well worth a download. It came in about 2 hours 40 minutes, so it was a lengthy show, but it flew by as I listened to it, because it was it was interesting. How did you find that?
Well, it was interesting. I haven't worked with Frederick since he was on my show probably 2014. You know, last time I asked him to come on, he was busy, and I have not quite asked him to come back. So when I was asked to come on, it was originally going to be with Jim Rizzoli, and then Frederick was going to drop, but Dr. Tobin, he stayed on and made for quite an interesting show. He was, I'll be honest, man, he's a really smart guy, you know. He's well educated, and his, you know, bringing in the philosophy, and I'm like dead tired. It's like 3 in the morning. I'm like, man, I can't keep up with you, dude. I normally could, but anyways, no, he's a really bright guy. He's a humble guy, been through more wars than all of us combined. So having someone like him to be there in a case where Graham Hart was, which I guess is part of today's show, you know, Graham Hart having his problems now with getting trolled basically and harassed by Jewish elements, or what appears to be Jewish elements, or certainly Philo-Jewish or Philo-Semitic elements inside of Cornwall, made for a rather interesting show. So, and we hope that carries on through to today.
Well, it's interesting because one thing that Frederick mentioned, he mentioned that the inaccuracies on his Wikipedia page, and I've recorded one show with him, and it's show number 356. So folks, if you go to andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com, the search box in the top right hand corner of the site, and just type in 356 or type in Tobin, T-O-B-E-N, and the show was called Dr. Tobin's Wikipedia Page. And what we did, Dennis, and this was back nearly 2 years ago, June the 5th, 2017. We went through the Wikipedia page as a kind of bio show, so he could say what was true and what was inaccurate, and it turned out really, really well.
Interesting. Yeah, and I think it's very unfair, you know, also that a lot of these companies that lord over information are essentially purposely and willfully misleading everybody. And that's, of course, an issue that I've been starting to touch on a little bit through the Section 230 of the American Communications Decency Act of 1996, and how we got to where we are today with so many of these trolls and really negative characters, but trolls really lording over large swaths of the internet and preventing the internet from being what it should have been. And so it is an issue for all of us. For me, less than others, but certainly it's an issue for all of us.
I think what was most interesting, of course, for those of you who don't know the backstory to the Graham Hart show this week, Graham put a song out less than a year ago now, and it was called Hoax Train. And some guy alerted the mainstream media to this and said it was anti-Semitic. Yeah.
No, it is. I'll give it closer because I've been following it a little bit, probably more than you. It's Tim Dwelly. He's a counselor for Penzance in Cornwall. He has a history of going all the way back to 2012, 2009, of chasing down anti-Semites. So he's one of these guys. He's either a closet Jew, he's part of the LGBTQ community or something. We're still trying to track down where his motivations are. But he basically, he's got a new website he put up on Facebook called Anti-Semitism, Cornwall Anti-Semitism Watch. It's kind of like the one in, I guess, the main one in the UK, Anti-Semitism Watch or whatever it's called in the UK. Campaign Against Anti-Semitism, I think it's called. So it's in this same vein, and it's basically those who support the Jewish-Israeli angle to go out and slander and libel anyone they can to get them removed from office or get them removed from public life. And it's really just an insane, from my point of view, an insane thing to be doing as a grown adult, but that's how these people are. So what he did is he, as under this Cornwall anti-Semitism watch, he called the Penzance Pirates and says, "Oh, I've this anti-Semite there," and the Penzance Pirates immediately took it down. It wasn't really immediate. We're finding now that there was basically a 3-week lag or so, 3 to 4 week lag before this story went public. But we've seen it time and time again. We put out the modus operandi right there on Cornwall Watch or Cornwall Anti-Semitism Watch about how the process works. You know, first they go after you, then they, next thing you know, they're putting it all over the media. These are coordinated campaigns against people, and it's really all designed to take voices out of the nationalist community. And sure enough, it ended up on BBC about the Cornwall area, but still on BBC or BBC Two. It was, of course, on all the Cornwall newspapers. And just, again, we are at war with this enemy force that wants to silence any and all dissent. You know, this Dwaley guy, he was a Labour party member up in Cornwall. About 3 weeks ago, about the time that this all went down, he quit the Labour Party, moved over to what's called an independent group, and he's still lording over his area as now an independent. He should have resigned if he's that upset, and called for new elections. We understand thousands of people now in his area have called for him to be removed, and this is a developing story, quite frankly, because it's hitting, really for us, it's hitting within our inner circle. This Graham Hart's a good friend of ours. He's been someone who has matured, if we can say that, and his knowledge of the realities that we are facing here in the West. So being an inner circle story, it is something that we should be taking a personal interest in and doing something about. This isn't just another name on the street. This is somebody we know, who we've collaborated with, who we've worked with. So one of the issues we are looking at now is, what do we do relative to Mr. Tim Dwaley? We know who he is. We know his phone number. We know everything about the guy that we can't. We understand that, again, he's got 30 years, Andy, in the labor movement, 30 years. And if you go online, there's very little about the guy. So he's not a very effective guy. He's a mean-spirited type of guy. And what else can I say? I mean, this is something that we want to – this is on our battlefield, Andy. This is an inside – this is inside. This is now inside our inner circle. Mr. Dwaley did drag me into it, has accused me of being an anti-Semite. And of course, I'm just going to say thank you, whatever that means. Jews don't represent me. There's nothing about the Jewish community and their political interests that represent my interests. So if Jews want to call me an anti-Jew, well, okay, they're anti-me too. So, okay, we're just on the same playing field. I don't see a big deal out of all this, quite frankly. Jews don't represent a lot of us. So to be called an anti-Semite usually just means you disagree with Jews, or you are putting forward the truth, or you're saying truthful things. And I think that's kind of what you dug up when you looked into the song Hoax Train. And you did your research, and perhaps you can share that now. What did you find when you went online and saw about the swimming pools and Anne Frank? I mean, what did you learn when you started to find, to go research this?
Well, it's funny, Dennis, because I only actually did this a few minutes before we started recording. It was something at the back of my mind, but I'm pleased I did it this way, because then the audience can as well. And first, if we start off with the song Hoax Train, it's largely the chorus. Okay, but you've got a couple of verses in there, and one of them, Graham mentions a swimming pool at Auschwitz, and the other one, he mentions the ballpoint pen used in the Anne Frank diary. So they're the only two things that this guy can latch onto as somehow being anti-Semitic. So what I did is I took the most popular search engine out there, Google, and I've typed in Auschwitz swimming pool. Okay. And this is, it says about 659,000 results at the top. And the very top one is photo of swimming pool at Auschwitz main camp. And this article might take me a couple of minutes to read, but I think it's worth reading. So folks, if you just type in Auschwitz swimming pool, certainly as I'm recording this, this is the one that comes out the top. It's photo of swimming pool at Auschwitz main camp. Let's click on that. Before we do, there's a right hand column and there's what looks like a book, Swimming in Auschwitz, Survival Stories of Six Women. I haven't looked into that, but that's on the right. So let's go into it here. Scrapbookpages.com is the website. Swimming pool at Auschwitz 1 is the heading, and they've got a photo there. The photo above is an early morning shot of Block 6, one of the brick barracks buildings in the Auschwitz main camp. In the background, you can see construction workers. Sorry, my page just went. Here we are. In the background, you can see construction workers repairing the swimming pool. The photo below shows what the swimming pool looked like in 1996 before preservation work began. The high diving board is at the far end in the background of the photo. The diving board itself is now gone. In the background on the left side of the photo above, you can see the wall around the camp, and on the right you can see blocks 7 and 8 in the camp. When I visited Auschwitz in 1998, I asked to see the swimming pool, but I was told that it was not on the tour. My tour guide told me that there were two swimming pools, one for the prisoners and one for the SS men, but she would not show me either pool. When I returned in 2005, the swimming pool for the prisoners was still not included on the tour, but I found it myself as I wandered around on my own in the early morning. The swimming pool is now called a water reservoir on a signboard that was erected sometime after my visit to Auschwitz in October 2005. The words on the signboard are in Polish, English and Hebrew. The sign reads as follows: Fire Brigade Reservoir, built in the form of a swimming pool, probably in early 1944. Old black and white photos of the swimming pool can be seen on this website, so there's a link there, folks. There is also a water reservoir at the Mauthausen concentration camp, which is built in the form of a swimming pool. On my 1998 tour of Auschwitz-Birkenau, I saw a pool of water along the main road in the Birkenau camp. My tour guide told me that this was a water reservoir. The pool was gone when I visited Birkenau in 2005. Barbara Cherish, the daughter of Arthur Liebenschell, wrote a book which was published in 2009 entitled My Father, the Auschwitz Commandant. In her book, Barbara credits her father with building a swimming pool for the use of the prisoners. Liebenschell was the commandant of the Auschwitz main camp for 5 months, beginning on December 1, 1943. Liebenschell is credited with other improvements at Auschwitz I, including the tearing down of the standing cells in Block 11. In the epilogue of the book entitled Death Dealer, which was first published in 1992 as the autobiography of Auschwitz Commandant Rudolf Hess, the editor of the book, Stephen Pasculi, wrote the following: When Hoss was promoted to Berlin, his replacement commandant, Arthur Liebenschell, was put in charge of the Auschwitz main camp. He had the water trough near Block 7 and 8 converted into a swimming pool for capos and prisoners who worked well. So it says this page was last updated on January 17th, 2010. I'm not going to link it to the post for the show. Guys, you'll have to go in and type in, as I did, Auschwitz swimming pool into Google, and this is the result that comes up at the top. Sorry about the lengthy explanation there, Dennis, but I think it was all worth covering. Your thoughts, please.
Well, to those of us who followed the history, I mean, Auschwitz was a work camp. Bottom line, it was a work camp. It was not a death camp. And that's the whole point here, is that it was a work camp. And the idea of a swimming pool, well, of course, if you have workers, you have to provide your workers with ample free time in order to be productive. Everybody knows this. You cannot work people like dogs because you're going to get no production out of them. So if you have a work camp, you must provide activities that allow your employees, essentially, to effectively and productively do their job. And so that's why we see at Auschwitz, we have orchestras, we have brothels, we have their own script, meaning their own money system. They had, again, plays, drama. They had swimming pools. They had soccer matches. you had basically all the trappings of a summer day camp, whereby essentially you had people inside of this camp. There was war literally all around them, and they were basically protected within this camp until the Allies decided to bomb those supply lines and tracks that allowed stuff to get into those areas. And of course, if it was such a terrible, terrible, terrible place, it's very curious that Elie Wiesel, the famed fraudster, he went marching out with the Germans by foot. I mean, as the Germans retreated, Elie Wiesel went with them. Now, you would think that Elie Wiesel, with all the you know, and that's what's really disgusting about, to me, the Jewish people here, is that even when they're treated well, they lie about you. That's what really annoys the hell out of me, Andrew, because here's Elie Wiesel. He's literally walking out with his captors. And then after it's all said and done, he turns and writes some of the most atrocious stories that have long since been basically shown to be frauds. And this level of dishonesty is what's ruling us in the West right now. And it's something that we must put a stop to. Otherwise, it's going to devour us. And that's really the point here. Jewish people want to devour everything about us. And they're using this, quote unquote, anti-Semitism as their means to do so. And we see it mainly in the UK. It's not as bad yet in America, although it is bad, but America's a pretty big place. UK is easier to control, I guess. But, you know, like just in this Cornwall area, Tim Dwelly has targeted 8 people for extermination, basically, which means kicking them out of office because they're, quote unquote, anti-Semites. And he gets to make that declaration. He's taken away the Penzance Pirates anthem because he makes that declaration. Nobody, none of us got to decide on that. He made that declaration. And to me, that's one individual making a huge difference, obviously. I mean, you can't say that one person isn't making a huge difference. Now, the point here is that the challenge is that what are people going to do about it? Are you going to allow a punk and a thug like a Tim Dwelly? And again, I'm just basing that comment on the online activity that I've read. And I've read probably about 100 pages now about this guy, his tweets, his behavior, how he treats people, what people say about him, how he comments and interacts. We're looking at a thug, and he is determining for Cornwall, everybody in Cornwall, what is allowed to be said. And he's basically a flake. And it's really time for people to push back. This is the point here, is that people have to push back. There's nothing about, quite frankly, that Graham Hart sung about that is anti-Semitic. There's nothing. He's just talking about a swimming pool, man. He's talking about an Anne Frank diary that is such a fraud that even Jews have had to retreat back. They still take their money with it, but they know they've got to retreat off of this issue because they don't have an ounce to stand on. And these are all key issues to me, Andy, that we have to keep addressing and pushing, because quite frankly, I think what you're seeing here is that if people don't push back within a very short term, already we're already there in many parts of the world, but there's just going to be no way to even voice yourself anymore. We already see this in the UK, Andy. When we go on air, you say, I can't, I can't, I can't. Okay, because you're already being silenced. And I'm adjusting for your market. So these are issues that are a concern to all of us. And I can't see how they're not. And really get off the chair and start pushing back.
Yes. And the next item that Graham mentioned in Hoax Train was Anne Frank's diary written in ballpoint pen. And again, I've gone into Google and I've just typed out at the top, Anne Frank diary ballpoint pen. And the first result, there's 99,200 results, is Anne Frank's diary written in ballpoint pen, Holocaust denial on trial. And this is from h.org, debunking denial AF3 ballpoint pen. So let's go into that first. I want to go into the first results. I'm not going to slant this show. Anne Frank's diary, colon, written in ballpoint pen, question mark. Was part of Anne Frank's diary written in ballpoint pen? Holocaust deniers claim part of Anne Frank's diary is written in ballpoint pen, which did not exist during the war. The facts are, Anne wrote the body of her diary with a fountain pen. Anything written in ballpoint pen was clearly done at a later date. First, there are two loose notes written by someone else and attached to Anne's papers after the war. Second, some of Anne's original diary entries have page numbers written in ballpoint pen, but these were obviously added at an early stage in the complication process. That's what it says. Anne's diary in the ballpoint pen. Anne wrote the body of her diary with a fountain pen. That is a pen that uses wet ink. The only traces of ballpoint pen ink are, and they go on about, confined to two loose scraps of paper put with the diary materials later, probably by Otto Frank, which was her father. They're clearly in a different handwriting than Anne's. When Otto Frank organised the books and papers after the war, he also probably numbered the pages partly in ballpoint pen and partly in coloured pencil. No single entry from Anne Frank's diary is written in ballpoint pen. Right, that's the first search result. So let's have a look at the second search result. And this is Anne Frank diary fraud finally admitted. This is by Der Himmelstern, and the website is deviantart.com. And so let's go into that and see what that says. So this is the second result on Google for that search term. Anne Frank diary fraud finally admitted. Sunday, January the 24th, 2016. Finally, the long-time fraud of Anne Frank's diary was publicly admitted by the Anne Frank Foundation. Anne Frank's diary was co-authored by her father, and thus the credibility of the diary ultimately comes to an end. And then we've got a heading, the official admissions from the Anne Frank Foundation and the evidence of two distinct handwritings. The Basel, Switzerland Anne Frank Fonds, that's the Anne Frank Fund, which controls the copyright to the diary of Anne Frank, has admitted that the book was in fact at least co-authored by Otto Frank, Anne's father, after the war. The admission proves that the book, which is still heavily promoted as a Holocaust memoir, is in fact largely a post-war fabrication which contained parts of the young Anne's diary with extensive additions added by her father. This is obvious from even a cursory look at the actual diary. See, for example, the image below of two pages of the diary, which shows both Anne's real youthful handwriting and her father's obvious adult handwriting, although he signs his entries as Anne Frank. Normal copyright on books extends only 70 years after the author's death. As Anne Frank died of typhus in Bergen-Belsen in February 1945, the book theoretically entered the public domain in February 2015. But, as the New York Times went on to say, the Anne Frank Fonds has now decided to try to extend copyright on the book past the 70-year cut-off period by admitting that Otto Frank, who died in 1980, was indeed a co-author after all. Foundation officials should think very carefully about the consequences, said Agnes Tricor, a lawyer in Paris who specialises in intellectual property rights in France, where critics have been the most vociferous and are organising a challenge. If you follow their arguments, it means that they have lied for years about the fact that it was only written by Anne Frank. And then the last part here, the Bic ballpoint pen impossibility. People already knew that the diary was written with a Bic ballpoint pen, which was only a prototype at the time and was in no way industrialised, let alone sold on the market. They were commercialised in 1951. This already permitted many people to determine the book to be a fraud, as it was physically impossible for Anne Frank to write the diary with a Bic ballpoint pen unless she was capable of travelling through time to the future, etc., etc., etc. So essentially, that last bit there, that's something that the previous article has disputed. And so we can see there that the mainstream, I assume that the previous Google result was more mainstream, certainly, that it was only addendums that were in ballpoint pen. But it's very interesting, this article, that it says the New York Times have said that there's going to be a problem because they're admitting that Otto Frank was a co-author. So as I say, folks, this is just the top two results from the Google. And again, if we relate that to why Graham Hart is being attacked as anti-Semitic, well, these are two things that anyone out there can read just by typing in those search terms at the top of Google. So Google, are they anti-Semitic as well?
And the Anne Frank story is clearly a hoax. That's the whole point. It is a hoax. Anything written after her supposed writing is a hoax. So it is a hoax. And the other thing, too, is we hear Jews often tell us, you know, Anne Frank died in the Holocaust. No, she did not die in the Holocaust. She died of typhus. OK, a typhus epidemic went through that camp. 17,000 people died of typhus. Well, you know what, everybody? People right now are dying of typhus in Los Angeles right now. OK, so again, people do die. Diseases do come. And if you have a situation where you've got allies bombing supply lines, bombing medical supply lines, and you can't provide for the welfare of your people, guess what? Diseases are going to happen and people are going to die. Just like Los Angeles today, they have a typhus problem in LA today. Okay. Now, this is what, 2019, we have a problem with typhus in Los Angeles. So the idea that she, quote unquote, died of the in the Holocaust is, again, it's an outright lie. It's not true. She died of a disease, typhus. That is not dying in the, quote unquote, Holocaust. It's a disease. Furthermore, what I don't like about the Jewish angle here, and it's something that people need to wrap their heads around, is at the end of the day, everybody, you, I, everyone, we are jurors. We are not witnesses. We are jurors. We are sitting on the jury. One side, the victor presents their evidence. Okay, like an Anne Frank, like the hundreds of stupid, really silly stories, like the bone crushing machines, and you know I can't even name. You probably have more lists than I have, Andy, about the silly stories from the Holocaust. You know, the soap, the lampshades, and all this macabre idiocy that Jews have come up with over the years. And then you have, of course, the historians, the revisionists presenting their information. You've got the Treblinka mass graves, you know, where 45 Jews dug up 900,000 people and burned them on railway ties, and they all disappeared into the wind. Yeah, right. You know what? 45 Jews are going to dig up 900,000 people. Yeah, right. Okay. Sell me another story. And then, of course, you do the ground radar. There is no mass grave there. There was nothing. The ground is untouched. So we as jurors have to make a determination whether one side is telling the truth or the other. This is your responsibility as an adult to make the decision. It is not for the prosecutor to tell the jury, you have to vote my way or else you're an anti-Semite. What type of idiocy have we devolved to? The German courts have already said the truth is no defense. So, okay, we are on the jury. The truth is the truth, and it's no defense. So you're basically saying you're idiots in Germany. That's the bottom line. You're idiots. No amount of legal rhetorical wrangling is going to convince me otherwise. That the people and the court system of Germany is run by a bunch of unethical, unprofessional idiots. And they're willing to jail people because they're idiots. And there's no other way to describe it. How can you tell me, hey, see this wallet? It's blue. It's true. The suspect was wearing and had a black wallet. My wallet is bright blue, and there's no difference. The truth, sir, is no defense. You're guilty. That's a German court. That is just plain stupid. Now you have this level of stupidity going pretty much around the world. But the bottom line is, you, the listener, we, the consumers of this garbage coming out from the Jewish community, we are the jurors. We have to make the decision based on the facts. And if the facts don't match up, and if the witnesses are discredited, are you going to sit there and take a discredited witness who has lied in front of your face, and whatever he tells you next, you're going to convict based on the fact that he's been lying to you? If you're willing to do that, then you probably shouldn't be on the jury. But the fact is that all of us are on the jury. And we need to convince people that, look, you're a jurist here. It's not for Jews to tell you what to think. It's for you to start thinking again and make your own decision. And then you start removing political officials who are going against just common sense and decency. That's the main issue now. You saw the story just out of Chicago. Jussie Smollett creates this big hoax crime. Oh, two white guys put a noose around my neck and they were wearing MAGA hats and they did. And clearly a hoax. clearly he filed false police reports. And again, you have all the black community came together and they dropped the charges yesterday. What does that tell you? That a fair and decent court is purely a white European ideal, at least relative to our societies. It doesn't hold true in a Jewish court. They'll lie to you all day. They'll even tell you the truth is no defense. The black people all get together and say, well, okay, Juicy, don't do that again, but we're going to drop the charges. See, fairness is not a part of these cultures. It's not a part of their DNA. This is something people need to get their head around. We cannot combat dishonest, unethical people with our same egalitarian idea of fairness, and you think everything is going to be treated, you're going to be treated the same as you're treating them. You have to start getting smarter and much more clever about what you are up against in this battle for Western civilization. And that's something that really, Andy, I wish people would really start to focus on now. The Juicy Smollett story is one. The Graham Hart story is another. And we're seeing this, Alison Chablow, another. We're seeing this everywhere. It's in your face, which is good for us because we have examples now everywhere, Andy.
Well, it's interesting because this Holocaust narrative, people say throughout the alternative media, it's the only thing that you seem to be unable to question. And I'll give you some examples. I mean, Dennis, you've been running a show for over a decade. You've had hundreds of different guests. Now, I've had, and a lot of these that I mentioned, you will know, and they've probably been on your show also. I've had Jim Fetzer on my show who said that the moon landings were a hoax. I've also had David John Oates on my show who used reverse speech and said that that seemed to indicate that they happened. I've had people on my show who've disputed the official narrative of the Sandy Hook shooting. And then I've had Deanna Spingola on my show who said that that actually happened. I've had MS King, Mike King on my show, who says that Hitler definitely died in the bunker in Germany. I've had Harry Cooper on my show, who said that Hitler was drugged and smuggled out of Germany against his will with Eva Braun, and he died somewhere in South America in 1961. So my point is if we're not allowed to see different points of view, you know, how are we able to interpret history? I haven't gone to each of these people and said, right, you know, you're definitely right and you're definitely wrong and what have you. I bring the people on and I let the audience decide. Now, if we've got areas like that's why I read the two articles there on Google, on regarding the ballpoint pen. I wanted the more mainstream one that goes along with the official narrative. I wanted that out there as well, so then people can listen to both and they can make their own decision. In the Bilderberg meeting, this one that passed just last year, where it will be up for another one in a few months, the last item on the agenda, Dennis, I'm not sure if you're aware, was the post-truth world. And isn't that what we're living in today?
Well, we've actually been living in it probably since the 1960s, ever since television started to come onto the scene. I mean, actually, we've been living in a post-truth world since before that. You know, our media has been lying. This Jewish media has been lying to us for who knows how long. So and we are living in it today for sure, but we've probably been living it in our entire lives, that this whole fabricated reality is itself a lie. And that is getting into a much bigger thing that people probably have a harder time grasping, let alone the little individual pieces being a lie. But Andy, I would argue that maybe this entire crafted reality is a lie. And, you know, just, who knows, right? I mean, because I can take so many events through history and say this was a lie, this was a lie, this was a lie. And, you know, I'm a top history student back in the day, you know, and probably 60% of the stuff that I believed and memorized were all lies. So I think we just, maybe this whole existence, Andy's somewhat of a lie. The philosophers tell us that, Andy. They say, well, it's all an illusion. So I don't know if you want to call an illusion a lie, but sometimes you got to wonder, Andy.
Yeah, it's interesting because you can take that even further and you can go into things that David Icke promoted years ago. There was that story on that book. It was called The Holographic Universe. Are you familiar with that?
I've heard, but not familiar. Not familiar, no.
It was a little bit over my head, to be quite honest with you. And, you know, everything is an illusion and all this. Well, it certainly seems very real when we see friends of ours being attacked and things like that. And I think, as you say, it's important that we do forge alliances. And the other thing that's very important, not just for you or I, but anybody out there, it's never to engage with the mainstream media. I was listening to a show earlier in the week, and I forget what it was, but someone said, look, you can't have a discussion with somebody if they're not prepared to have a discussion. If their mind is already made up, then you can't have that discussion. And so by that rationale, anyone from the mainstream media who's basically been told this is fact and you're here to shout the other person down or abuse them or what have you, that's why I would never comment on anything in the mainstream media ever, you know, I'm accused of, because if I did decide to take him on, like Frederick Toben said, his own Wikipedia page, I don't have a Wikipedia page, but he said to them, you know, this is inaccurate. Oh, well, you can't change it. And he can't sue. He can't do anything. You know, this is libel and defamation. Yeah. So I leave it alone. Yeah,
again, this is the issue. I'm sure you heard the show with the Section 230. You say you listen. So, you know, we've been talking about this Section 230 issue. About the Communications Decency Act, because what this has allowed people to do, and really it's an unholy alliance between website operators like a Wikipedia, Facebook for that matter, Twitter, and the dishonest trolling world. So what's happening is that the websites are shielded from being sued for inaccurate information, and they know damn well that the information is not accurate, and they're not allowing it to even be corrected. That's the main problem here. They are proactively ensuring that information is misleading. So my thoughts now is that the United States especially, we need to repeal or certainly modify our Section 230, because what's happened, like in the case of Frederick, he is being libeled by a website. They have been notified. They are not allowing him to even make the correction. So they are a party now to the libel. In the old days, it used to be, look, I'm just a platform. I don't have any say in what goes on. I'm providing all of you a service to point to put up your point of views. That was kind of like the Section 230 idea. So all of us could post. But what happened very early in the development of the internet is you had so many people, the trolling culture, the Gamergate culture, they were part of it. And then, of course, they broke off once they got hit by the social justice warriors themselves. They became rebellious against the social justice warriors. But at one time, they were all the same grouping. They were basically all hanging out together type of thing until they themselves got attacked. So you had this massive army, who knows how many, hundreds or millions of people online. Internet's big, folks. You're talking about the teenagers, the 20-somethings back 20 years ago, 15, 20 years ago. And they created this culture called that trolling culture. They would purposely and willfully lie to create animosity, to create conflict. Conflict created clicks by people trying to protect themselves. It created this online drama. It brought people to the internet. And the people who benefited from the activities of these organized trolling gangs were the website owners, who were able to get all the clicks and people coming to their websites. And then Google's paying out, back in the day, 30, you know, 0.3 euro a click for any advertiser that was clicked on and stuff like that. That's what drove the internet. And we're still suffering today. Nowadays, you've got, you know, it's grown up into the blue check marks over at Twitter. A lot of these blue check marks, you look at them, these are young kids, 28, 30, 32, which for us is now young. They have no manners, quite frankly. A lot of them are mean-spirited. We saw that in the Covington Catholic story that rolled out. The amount of venom that these people spit and spewed out was just unbelievable. But that is the trolling environment. That's the trolling mentality. And who benefits? Twitter benefits, because they get all these clicks. They get all this controversy. People try to defend against the sheer lies that Twitter is allowing to be put out there. So the website owners, everybody, is benefiting immensely by allowing this trolling environment to persist today. It just, instead of the old trolling world, now it's It's blue check marks. But it's the same thing, Andy, that we're living under. So Section 230 has to be repealed. We need to make a change. We need to drop all protections. How dare a Wikipedia participate in the libel of somebody and then expect to be actually protected by law? Because right now we're protecting the libel. This is unconscionable, quite frankly. Especially once you have somebody reach out to you and say, hey, I am that person, and I am telling that this and this and this is inaccurate. And if Wikipedia says, well, we can't change it because, well, now they're a participant to the libel and they should be sued. Again, more issues that we have to tackle, and we need people to get involved and find an issue you're good at and doggedly go after it.
Yes, absolutely. And the other thing I'm going to mention, but I'm not going to read this one because I ended up going through the first two entries from the search term Anne Frank diary ballpoint pen. I'm also going to focus on the second issue result from the Google search term Auschwitz swimming pool. This is from the Southern Poverty Law Center. Basically, it's entitled Lying About Auschwitz, and it's a hit piece on the Barnes Review and on Carolyn Jaeger. So I'm not going to go into that. The SPLC have been setting up these hate maps and putting people on it, like my friend Adrian Krieg, and when he contacts them to ask why they won't speak to him, again, like you just said about Wikipedia, they do what they want, and if you offer any of evidence to the contrary. And Adrian has also, he's tried to get lawyers so he can file some sort of class action suit, Dennis, and none of them will take the case.
Yes, yeah, and this has to change. I mean, at the end, we have to have clarity of information. As a free functioning society, we must have clarity of information. And if we are allowing this dishonesty to proliferate, then obviously we are living in a world that is post-truth. But we don't have to, I mean, why would we just stand by and do nothing about it? You know, I don't see how you can, I don't know how people do it, but if I walk up to you and just lie to your face, and then I tell you, if you know, and you have to believe me, you idiot. You have to. You know, you're going to get into some really major confrontations if you did that in real life. You know, people just don't accept generally being lied to straight to their face and then told, you have to now shut your mouth and believe me or else. No, you're going to have fighting and all kinds of stuff along the street. People are going to take offense to that and should. Well, it's the same thing online. We're just basically being told you can't do anything because, hey, everybody's quote-unquote protected by law. Well, that law needs to change. That's what the process is about. At one time, it was necessary. But as most laws, that which is negative, that which is evil, that which is idiotic in some cases, that which lacks class, lacks couth, will find ways to use those laws to their benefit. And what it is, Andy, is people going against the spirit of the law. That's the problem we have. You know, sometimes laws are written in spirit equally. You know, there's something called the spirit of the law. And people just go against that spirit because, hey, they can, because it's not written that way. And that, of course, shows an inferior, low-class individual, but this is the world we live in. So what to do about Andy? Again, you know, there's so many issues, from the vaccines to the history to the information that we have to the false flags that we see going on and proliferating around the world. It's interesting times, to say the least. And if you can't find something to motivate you to do something, you're just really not trying, would be my guess.
Yes, and I think what we've done today is basically, in summary, we've shown that Graham Hart could have quite easily typed in two search terms into Google, got information out of them, put that information into a song, and now he's being called an anti-Semite. Well, if he's an anti-Semite, then so is Google anti-Semitic because of the results that are out there. You have to look at the human cost of this as well, because, of course, you know, Graham mentioned on the show in his opening statement on Monday, you know, about how his family's been dragged into it, how his 94-year-old mother was absolutely beside herself when she saw him on as the main story on her local news on television, how his grandchildren were upset by it, you know? And all he's basically done is he's just repeated what information is out there for people to find anyway. And that is worth affecting his whole family.
Yes, terrible. I mean, Graham knew it. Let's be honest, everybody. Let's not be innocent here. He knew that putting that story out at some point in time was going to get awareness brought to it. Let's not be naive. Now, from a practical point of view, there's nothing wrong in the song, though. Okay. In other words, he knew that once that song was released, somebody somewhere along the chain was going to make an issue with it. We knew that. He knew that. It went out for, 7-8 months or so without anybody raising awareness to it. Is there anything wrong with the song? Actually, no. It's factual. There are swimming pools. There is this. There is that. Is it anti-Semitic? No. We are talking about something that is factual. If you want to call the facts anti-Semitic, then obviously Jews have a major issue now because they have to address why they believe in lies and deception. And that's the issue we should be raising with them, is that why do you demand that the world believe your lies and deception? And focus on that. And always put it that way. Why do you want me to believe in your lies and deception? And let them defend themselves. Because anytime you try to defend yourself as an anti-Semite, you're on the defense. So stop going on defense, go on offense. I said, oh, really? The way you're using the word is that you believe the truth is a lie. And so therefore, why do you want me to believe your lies and your deceits? They won't know how to deal with that. But see, it's a very simple one line. Why do you need me to believe in your lies and deceits? Why do you need me to? Who are you? You're a freaking stupid Jew at the end of the day, with all due respect. Why do you need me to believe these lies and deceits? And they can't answer that. They can only huff and puff. But at the end, who are they? Who are these people? It's like, you know what, dude, I got my own life. I got my own way of doing things. Your culture to me is an abomination, but I'm not going out after you. You're in my space going after me. So you tell me what's the problem here and who is the problem. I'm minding my own business. I'm saying you guys are a scumbag culture, but I'm not going after you personally. It's a scumbag culture. And here you are proving my point, because why are you in my space at this very instant trying to go after us? Because you're scumbags. So why do you need me? Just answer this question. The thing is, no, Jews don't talk to me anymore, Andy. They block me. They don't ever get engaged with me anymore. But I would straight up ask them if they are. Why? Seriously, why do you need me to believe in your lies and deceits? Why is it so important to you? Why is it so important that you rule over everybody? And then when you rule over everybody and your policies are a complete failure, which they are for us in the West, why do you want to get angry when we think your policies suck? Because you're so stupid. Because their policies suck. What, flooding our countries with all of this riffraff from around the world is somehow an intelligent, genius policy from the government? And Jews are running around bragging about how they're the ones behind it? Is that somehow intelligence? So who are they to continue to get into the way of the political process? You have your own interests. And if you don't pursue them, guess what? Jews are going to keep pursuing theirs. And guess what? Before you know it, you're not going to exist anymore. Because that is what Jews have in mind. That's their main interest, is the destruction of Western civilization. And people are waking up to it. They are getting their handle around it. But not enough, and not enough action in return. That's the issue we have. Now, we see progress, Andy. We're not complaining, but we're just appealing. Folks, take it a little bit more seriously, because trust me, the Jewish people are taking their side seriously. And if you don't believe me, just do something and watch them go on like rabid animals calling you an anti-Semite. Okay, well, then there's your proof, man. So, Andy, my point here is that you want to poke a stick in the hornet's nest. You need to do that. And this song was kind of, it did that. But it also helps us expose the degree of infestation of Jewish mindset within our culture. There's absolutely no reason why this song should be seen as a harmful thing to anybody because it's very truthful what's in it, that he should determine for everybody in Cornwall what they can and can't partake in. He's an enemy of the people, everybody, and that should be focused on. He wants people in Cornwall, like Graham Hart and others he disagrees with, to not be comfortable in their own homes, to not be comfortable in their own space. And yet he wants to carry on with this behavior without any ramifications. Now think about that for a second. There were in the old days the shunning of people, the shaming of people. And he wants a one-way ticket to try to shame people. Now I assure you, this guy is so arrogant, so filled with chutzpah, that a Tim Dwelly, you cannot talk to him. He's an arrogant, ignorant, complete, just follow his online stuff. He is arrogant. So you cannot rationalize with this guy. There, he doesn't rationalize. The second you are opposed to him and people like him, you are immediately labeled racist, hater, anti-Semite. You cannot rationalize with these people. Like Andy was talking about the mainstream media earlier, you cannot rationalize with them. This is partially why I believe, Andy, on a tactical level, they are so anti-violence, because they know that their behavior is violent in an intellectual way. I mean, come on, what he did to Graham Hart is a form of violence. He violated that family. Violation and violence go hand in hand. But because they are so filled with their own arrogant chutzpah, you cannot use the same in kind. You need to have a tactical way to break these people down so that they equally find themselves on defense. Otherwise, they will continue to bully, to punish, to harass, to stalk, because let's face it, he's stalking. This guy's a stalker, everybody. You have to go in and try to find this information. So you have to stalk it down. Nobody was going after Tim Dwelly here, everybody. He's an idiot. And people have known that he's an idiot for a long time, because you can read it in the comments about this guy. And he is just one person that is symptomatic of a much wider and larger group of people that share his mentality. And this is the real enemy within our gates. And it has to be dealt with tactically, pragmatically, with a lot of cleverness, but it has to be done. You cannot allow these people to come and just basically run roughshod over your entire civilization, your entire county, your entire city. If you allow it, then you deserve it. That's the Jewish mentality. When I was in Los Angeles, Andy, that Jewish people would tell me all the time, Dennis, what you say about us is true, but hey, these people are stupid. They don't get it. So what do you want us to do? Stop doing what we're doing when we benefit so much by their stupidity? In other words, we had Jew-to-Jew type conversations from L.A. They told me, yeah, of course we're doing it, Dennis, but hey, you want us to give up our ability to keep raking in profits and money from all these people because they're stupid and they don't want to look after their own interests? Don't blame us. Blame them. In other words, there are people that will take advantage of you then. And you got to stop being so egalitarian, thinking everybody's going to treat you fair because you're fair. That's not how life works within their communities and their world.
Yes, I mean, it's... Didn't you offer this Dwelly guy? Did you actually offer him the opportunity to be on your show to debate?
Twice. And the only response is, well, why don't you stop spreading your anti-Semitism and hatred around? I'm like, dude, shut the frick up. Seriously. You know, but yes, I did twice. And then he blocked me. He's blocked me on Twitter already. He blocked me on Facebook. He has blocked his private profiles from being previewed. He's blocked many different things. He has eliminated all. See, this is what I mean. These guys are cowards, everybody. He blocked my Twitter. He blocks the Facebook, the Messenger. He blocks literally everything that allows me to contact to him. So, okay, you can't reason with them. he just throws all this vicious accusations about people, and then he just leaves, and then he blocks everybody. So you got to clean up the mess.
Yes, we're coming up to the end of the.
This guy's abusive. He's an abusive guy, and it's not just him. We're talking about a culture of this abuse that goes all the way down into the troll world of the internet. And basically, every time you see a Jew saying calling people an anti-Semite, that's a form of a Jewish person heaping abuse on people. Because I can guarantee you, most people who are called this, they're not. They don't care. It's not their world. They don't make a profession of it like you and I that really study it and understand it. These are just like Jews, like, well, we're just trying to get by. And, oh, you know, we just go to the deli and we like to eat gefilte fish and we're just normal people. Don't put us involved. Okay, well, what do you think you guys are doing when you label everybody anti-Semites? It's a form of Jewish abuse. It's a form of Jewish hate speech towards us. What do you think it is when you have a situation in Christchurch? And by all indications, it was a complete fraud, a complete false flag. And you've got Jewish groups everywhere saying, now you got to go after white nationalists. And now somehow we're supposed to be in with these, like we're going to go shoot up a mosque. Yeah, right. How stupid is that? But they want to equate that to all of us now. You see it in their media all the time, Andy. So, okay, again, this idea that somehow we're supposed to be fair with our language and fair with our speech, and then Jews don't have to be. I'm sorry. You know, we need a level playing field. Otherwise, you lose anyways. I'm not a coward, Andy. If I'm going to go fight on a baseball field or something in a sport, I'm going to, if I get a glove, you know, and I'm going to let you have a glove too. If I get to use a proper bat, I'm going to let you use a proper bat too. If I have to run 90 feet, I'm going to go ahead and you're going to go ahead and run that same 90 feet. I'm going to be fair about how I go about and compete. Jews are not fair. And they don't even try to hide it. They want the glove, but they want you to play barehanded. They want the bat, but they want you to try to hit the ball with a toothpick. Oh, you struck out. Oh, you're a failure. You're just angry because we're more successful than you. In the meantime, you're trying to hit that same fastball with a toothpick. And it's the same thing we see with the transgender movement. You know, oh, look at us. You're not, you know, and you got these men competing, these 6'4" men competing as women in cycling events now on the world stage. And they're men. Oh, you're just jealous because you can't compete with us and we're better than you. And it's basically men competing against the women. Everything about this culture is not fair. And that's an issue that people need to grasp also, Andy. You're not dealing with an energy, a thought form that believes in the Western values of fair play and sport and it, you know, everything that we believe in, you know, this fairness that I grew up with. So I'm going to assume it's part of our culture because I grew up with it. You know, this fairness, be fair, play fair, don't lie, you know, don't cheat, this type of stuff. So I just see we have a huge problem relative to what we are fighting against because they don't play by the same rules.
Yes, absolutely. And before we go, I want to give a shout out to 808, one of your regular callers. He's a great caller. I've had callers on my show because I don't take calls. So I've had Frank from North Carolina, Joe Church, Murr from Wisconsin, and if he ever wants to be on, then he'd be most welcome as a guest. And I'm pleased that he appreciates the new fetch on Friday's show. And I want to close out with the immortal line from Joel Stein in his article, Who Controls Hollywood? Come on. I don't care if Americans think we're running the news media, Hollywood, Wall Street, or the government. I just care that we get to keep running them. So an admission from a Jew that the Jews are running these institutions. Don't forget to go to InsideTheEyeLive.com tomorrow on Saturday for the flagship show. Dennis, what time is that going out and where can people listen?
It's going to be 10 o'clock a.m. everybody, InsideTheEyeLive.com, 10 o'clock to 10 o'clock to 1 o'clock, right? And right now it's going to be a rant show. I don't have any guests lined up, everybody, so just come in, sit down, get some coffee, a beer, whatever it is at the time of day you're at, and just sit back and enjoy because it looks like it's going to be a 3-hour rant-filled show.
Excellent. Well, Dennis and I will be back with Fetch on Fridays at the same time next week. I will, of course, be back with you all on Monday. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend. And until Monday, folks, bye for now.
This has been the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show on Eurofolk Radio. To learn who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticize. You can support Andy's work by going to his website, andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com, where his book, The Synagogue of Satan, is available in an updated, expanded, and uncensored edition.